It's where you go to bike, hike, and stroll miles of pathways over more than 7,000 acres of parkland. A place to go explore rivers and fish their bountiful waters. Natural places to go marvel at magnificent wildlife while you play outdoors and go wander charming communities. Find all this and more at Destination Downriver. Give it a go.
Today's podcast is presented by MarketInsights.us. With the podcast on YouTube, produced by the City of Taylor's Media Center. Thank you for the generous support of our community sponsor. When your destination is beyond downriver, let Martinson Family of Funeral Homes help you and your family. With locations in Trenton, Allen Park, Mabee, Rockwood, and Monroe, their staff is available 24/7 at 734-671-5400. For more information, visit martinson.com.
Thank you to our team sponsor, Allegra, Marketing, Print, and Design. Let Allegra assist you with your print, mail, design, and signs. Located in Wyandotte, Michigan, or call 734-284-5330.
welcome to another episode of Destination Downriver. I'm your host, Carl Zimak. What you just watched was the MC5 in concert at Wayne State University over a half century ago. The MC5 was a revolutionary rock band consisting of Wayne Kramer, Fred Sonic Smith, Dennis Machine Gun Thompson, and lead singer Rob Tyner, all of Linkin Park, along with Detroit native Michael Davis. To top it off, they were managed by the counterculture activist of the time, John Sinclair. Throw that all together and mix in the turbulence of the 1960s, and you get a somewhat forgotten MC5, rock's most revolutionary band. They will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on October 19th in Cleveland, Ohio, along with Foreigner, Cher, Dionne Warwick, and others. But before that, they'll be celebrated in their hometown of Linkin Park on October the 12th. Joining us today to focus on the MC5 are Brad Talinsky, a Taylor native and former editor of Guitar World magazine, who authored the new book, MC5, an oral biography of rock's most revolutionary band, Gary Graff, a well-known award-winning music journalist, Tom Carnes, former mayor and now executive director of the Linkin Park Chamber of Commerce, Stephanie Davis, Linkin Park Community Events Director, and Jeff Day, director of the Linkin Park Historical Museum. We'll kick it off next with author Brad Talinsky on this episode of Destination Downriver. We're here now with Brad Talinsky, the author of the MC5, an oral biography of rock's most revolutionary band. Brad is a published author and editor and former editor-in-chief of Guitar World magazine for over 25 years. His book is going to be coming out next month. Brad, welcome to Destination Downriver. We're happy that you could join us today.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me on and letting me talk about this this great book that I've been working on.
Fantastic. Well, let's start at the top because you're working off a lot of notes over the course of a long period of time from the late Ben Edmonds. Yes. Why did he do such a deep dive into the MC5? What caught his interest when it came to that band?
Well, I mean, we could say this about Ben, but we can also say this about many, many people on why they're infatuated with the MC5. It's sort of right there in the title, right? Rock's most revolutionary band. Now, that sounds like maybe a little bit of hyperbole, but it really isn't. I mean, you look at the MC5, and they partially invented punk rock. I mean, they were one of the pioneers of heavy metal, but they were also revolutionary from a cultural standpoint. You know, they were managed by one of the most prominent radicals of the 60s, John Sinclair, the famous John Sinclair. And, you know, they were part of the White Panthers Party, which was this sort of, anti-racism, anti-war, you know, communist-leaning collective, so they were mixing it up on a musical level, but also in an incredibly interesting way on the cultural level too.
How long did
And I have to say one other thing: they were a hell of a band live too. So you know, anybody that was fortunate enough to see them, it was easy to get obsessed with the band.
Brad, how long did they stay together as a band?
Oh, you know, they weren't, you know, they were together for quite a while, 6-7 years when they were kids, but really only their recording career was short. I mean, they did 3 records, so they were only really in the media spotlight maybe 3-4 years.
Were they the, was their music the ultimate representation of that 1960s tumultuous time period? I mean, there was so much going on at that time, both good and bad, and plus highly localized with some of it in Detroit. that went on, the 67 riots, things like that. How do you see it?
Well, you know, they call it Detroit Rock City, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the reason it's called Detroit Rock City is partly or maybe mostly because the MC5, you know, they were a terrific live band, and they brought together all these incredible elements that were so distinctly and uniquely Detroit. I mean, you hear about the influence of the Rolling Stones or the Who. Those are some of the maybe obvious touchstones. But when they were getting ready to put on a show, what they would listen to rev themselves up was James Brown, was Motown, was jazz, free jazz. These were the things that really sort of turned them on. You know, when you saw them live, you saw the James Brown influence, because they totally gave it like 300% every time they were on stage, you know, with the jumps and the splits and the hype man JC Crawford, like pushing the audience to ever, you know, bigger heights. They were extraordinary. They were a force of nature.
If for those of us who have never heard or witnessed the MC5 in concert, okay, and I did get on YouTube and check out their concert at Tarter Field at Wayne State. Who would they compare to today? Is there a comparable?
That's really a good question. You know, there's nobody in the rock world that really seems to be carrying that mantle of just an extraordinary, high energy live show. I guess that's why there's so much interest in them. I guess that's why we're talking about them today, is because they represent a time and an energy and a viewpoint and a kind of performance that you really can't get today. I don't think I'm being, you know, an old guy for saying that. You know, I'm not being nostalgic about it. I think it's absolutely true.
Well, I was wondering the same thing, Brad, because, you know, did the music, time period beget the music, or the music kind of frame the time period? I kept watching them thinking, wow, could this, what do you have to have going on in society to have that on stage? And I wasn't sure anything today can compare to that.
Yeah. I mean, what was interesting to me is, and I wasn't aware of when I was, before I started doing research in the book, how much influence these guys had on British punk rock. I mean, you tend to think of the MC5 as being, you know, a band of the 60s, part of the psychedelic 60s or Woodstock or something like that. But their influence has carried on and excited other bands. You know, Billy Idol read our book, and he totally loved it. He gave us a great quote about how great the band was when he had seen them. You know, the Clash, Joe Strummer talked about what a big influence the MC5 had on him. Motorhead, you know, Lemmy talks about how his band really just wanted to be the MC5. And it goes on and on. You have Kim Thayil from Soundgarden saying that they were influenced. Rage Against the Machine, you know, they were terrific and exciting and one of a kind band. And I just want to say, I think people will be sort of blown away by the stories in this book. It's about music for sure. And it's about the influence of free jazz, and it's about the influence of Detroit music on them. But it also incorporates a lot that's going on in politics these days. You know, all of the things that they were fighting for, you could even look at the MC5 as in many ways being the originators of like the new left or the woke generation. You know, was they were sort of anti police brutality, anti-authoritarianism, you know, pro-cannabis. There are all these different elements to what they were talking about back then that are extremely relevant now.
When it comes to the evolution of their music and their look and everything else, you mentioned Sinclair. Is he the key player here?
He's a key player. He was incredibly influential on the band. You know, they brought the music and he brought the political aspect of what they did. But to the band's credit, their lyrics aren't really political. They were more evangelists for a certain kind of lifestyle. In fact, Rob Tyner, the singer, was against writing overtly political lyrics because he said, then it becomes propaganda. It's political propaganda. It's not art anymore. And what they wanted to do was represent a free lifestyle. And, you know, the way I put it is that John Sinclair used the MC5 to weaponize his politics. And even John said something to the effect of they wanted to be the Beatles and I wanted them to be Chairman Mao. So you have this great sort of interesting conflict, but at the same time, he inspired them, and they inspired him in many ways. And you see that interplay in the book.
Interesting. The book is obviously a collection of stories from different perspectives, different people.
Yeah.
Let me put you on the spot, Brad. Sure. What's your favorite story within the story?
you know, I guess the thing that really surprised me, and I think that fans of the MC5 are really going to enjoy about the book, is the emergence of Rob Tyner as an incredible character, smart, and the actual heart of the band. You know, and he tells this one story in the book that is, you know, sort of sweet in a kind of way, you know, sort of vulnerable, where he always had he had problems with his hair. Like it was sort of wild and unruly, and it wasn't cool early on when they were competing, you know, playing the music of the Beatles, where everybody had this straight hair and everything. And he talks about the day that the first Jimi Hendrix record came out. And all of a sudden he saw how he could make his hair like Jimi Hendrix. And the next day he was automatically cool. So he has this really, that's really sort of the sweet side of the book, where he talks about how he was this awkward teen and how Jimi Hendrix's hair transformed his life. I thought that was a lot of fun. But their account of the Detroit riots of 1967, and they were right in the middle of the thick of things, I think is riveting.
Okay. All righty. It was riveting for a lot of us who lived through it. There's no doubt about that. Even though many of us were young, that's for sure. You grew up downriver in Taylor.
Yes, I did.
How long? What are your memories of that period? And when did you leave? And why did you leave?
I loved growing up in Taylor. You know, there. What surprises me, and what surprises, you know, when I look back on it, one thing that was interesting about Taylor was how sort of accepting everybody was. Like, one of my best friends growing up there was Hispanic. And I said to him, I go, do you ever remember anybody being racist or giving you a hassle for, you know? And he said, absolutely not. You know, so it was this sort of like really cool area where you could be who you wanted to be without too much hassle. And then I found like later on that that was a really rare experience. And that's what allowed me to become sort of what I wanted to be, which was a writer and a musician. Mm-hmm. And the reason I ended up leaving Taylor in the Detroit area was just search for opportunity. You know, I didn't know what I was going to be, whether it was going to be a musician or whether it was going to be a writer, but I knew that in New York there would be more opportunity for all of those things, you know, more outlets and very, I don't know, foolhardy or bravely, just threw caution to the wind. I didn't really know anybody out there. I just went out there to make my way. And got very, very lucky. And I like to say that for the last 30 years, I've been on a newsstand or in a bookstore in one way or the other that entire time, you know. But it was growing up in Taylor that gave me that sense of freedom and that sort of sensibility.
Well, that's fantastic. That is really fantastic. Great book, fabulous reviews. Like you were saying, Billy Idol, all of these people who chimed in with, you know, their tremendous review quotes really tells a lot about the job that you did with the book. Book comes out when?
Book officially comes out October 8th. Okay. But if you want to pre-order, it's up there on all the major online booksellers now. You can pre-order, but as I hope you guys may or may not explain, we're having a great book release party at the Detroit Institute of Arts on Friday at 6:30, October 11th. Yeah, and then. We're going to do another great thing with the Lincoln Park Historical Society the next day on Saturday at Memorial Park in Lincoln Park, where we're going to have all sorts of events and we're going to be there signing books. I have to say at the Detroit Institute of Arts, I should say this really quick, is that we're going to have the Detroit Cobras play there, who's one of Detroit's great garage rock bands. And me and my co-author, Jan Uhowski, will be speaking as well. And it's going to be a great time, and it's for free. So if you guys dig the MC5, if you dig the Detroit Cobras, come on out, buy a book. Or catch up with us on Saturday in Lincoln Park.
Well, fantastic. We wish you all luck in the world here. We know you're going to be back downriver for some of these events and things like that. And it sounds like you certainly have a book worth reading. These guys were different. And I think people would latch on to that story.
You know, I've been writing books for quite a while now. I did had a major book on Eddie Van Halen that came out a couple of years ago. I collaborated on a book with Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. And I have to say, I think this is the greatest story ever, greatest rock story ever told. I mean, I really, not because I wrote it, but because they lived it. And it is super entertaining.
Well, fantastic. Well, Brad, great to have you here with us today. And, you know, we're going to be turning this over to Gary Graff next. And then we're going to be talking to
a great man, Gary Graff. Yeah.
Yeah, great guy. And then we're going to come in the third portion of this in studio with some of the people from Lincoln Park who will be hosting that. So we look forward to seeing you downriver. This has been spectacular. We could talk all day on these guys.
Yes, we could.
But thanks for coming on. We really appreciate you you throwing and lending to this Destination Downriver episode.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Carl. Appreciate it.
Joining us on the second segment discussing the MC5 is award-winning music journalist Gary Graff. Gary, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing today?
It's great. Great.
Yes, we're all ready to kick out the jams right now, right?
Bingo. You got it. Well, if you're
couldn't resist.
So we were talking offline here just a moment ago. Such a influence on this band from John Sinclair, who was quite the activist in the 60s. And we talked briefly about Woodstock and the funny thing that Sinclair thought Woodstock was a little bit too pedestrian for the MC5. Tell us a little bit about that, Gary.
Well, the one thing you could think about was, you know, it's a good thing John Sinclair didn't look at the Altamont Festival and say, well, that looks more like it. Why don't you guys go play that? what a disaster that would have been, especially after the MC5's famous experience in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention. Yeah, I mean, John Sinclair was not a professional music manager. He was not slick. He was not part of the industry. If anything, he was just the opposite. So this was not necessarily the guy that was going to turn the MC5 into even the Jefferson Airplane or Sly and the Family Stone or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, but the MC5 would not have been the MC5 that we know and love and revere without John Sinclair and his influence on the band. He really brought a different kind of spin, a different kind of flavor, a different kind of perspective that all these years later was much more important than if he would have steered them in a more mainstream, hey, let's do the Ed Sullivan Show. Not that the Ed Sullivan Show would have had them, but you know, if he had tried to steer them into more of a mainstream direction. He is a big part of that legend and that mythology that is the MC5.
How would you describe the band's music to people who have never heard it, never watched it, never heard it?
It's interesting. So we really have different, with apologies to Taylor Swift, you have a couple different eras of the MC5 music. The band, you know, that made the Kick Out the Jams album, that recorded that live at the Grammy Ballroom, it was the same people, but it was a different intent than you had on the two studio albums that followed, Back in the USA and High Time. I mean, those had a lot of the same elements and a lot of the same sensibility, but there was more polish to those albums, and I think more of an intent to be a professional rock and roll band of that era than what you heard on Kick Out the Jams. That was the Cro-Magnon, and I often use that term, you know, version of the MC5, and that was them in the cave, if you will, if we're going to go with the Cro-Magnon metaphor. You know, this was them hunting the dinosaurs and, you know, lighting the fires, whereas the two studio albums were them trying to be songwriters and trying to make, you know, to make polished records that would fit in with the times. So that's a long way of saying it's difficult to really put one finger on the MC5 music. And I know a lot of people do. And they relate it to the Kick Out the Jams album and that Cro-Magnon type of sound. But, you know, I always tell people, listen to those two albums. And for that matter, listen to Heavy Lifting, which is coming out in October. And, you know, you get a different look at the band and its potential and its sensibility as musicians and songwriters.
Gary, if John Sinclair is the cultural or societal driving force behind the MC5, who is the musical driving force behind it?
I think a combination of Rob Tyner and Wayne Kramer and Fred Smith, and that's not to downplay at all, Michael Davis and Dennis Thompson, you know, but I think, you know, really Rob and especially Fred and Wayne were the primary songwriters So they were the ones bringing the material in. But the group drove itself. The group was a team vehicle. Okay, now, you know, not unlike a Formula One or NASCAR pit crew, whereas there may have been one guy behind the wheel in any given song, but it sure came into the pit and had the other four do what was essential work to each of the songs. So I would never just look and say there's one guy. I think a lot of people accept Rob Tyner. Boy, that's a gaffe. I accept Rob Tyner as kind of the spiritual, you know, guy. But in reality, this was as close as a collective and a communal, and it was a communal living existence for a while, as you get from most any band.
Gary, were you able to see them in person?
Not in the day. I was, you know, despite my hair color and my hairline, I was a little too young to see them back in the day. You know, my experience where I got into the MC5 was this Warner Special Products TV ad compilation album called Heavy Metal. And the first track on the album was Kick Out the Jams brothers and sisters version, because it was a squeaky clean Warner Special Products edition. But, you know, cool song. I want to hear more from this band. And I went and got Kick Out the Jams, and whoa, you know, like everybody else has that experience. And, you know, came to investigate them and read about them, get the other albums, and, you know, really was thrilled to death when I started doing music journalism for a living to be able to meet and talk to and really tap into, you know, all five of them over the years. And then, of course, to have Wayne come out and start playing live again, and then to have he and Dennis and Michael do their thing, and then Wayne to come out with the MC50 and then the MC5. I really, really felt like I got exposed to, and we should say, the Rob Tyner Memorial Show at the then State Theater. You know, I feel like I at least got exposed to the spirit and the ethos, even if I wasn't able to see the five live and in person in their heyday.
Does the band have as great an influence if it hadn't been performing through those down days, those dark days of the late 60s in Detroit?
That's a great question. Who knows? I mean, who knows if they would have had a real music manager to make them a real, you know, corporate rock and roll act, what would have happened? You know, what we're left with here is a band that was almost criminally underappreciated at its time, but that, and I know I'm not the only one who's pointed this out, that it's one of those bands like the Velvet Underground, like the Stooges, like the New York Dolls, that they didn't sell a lot of records, but every musician or every aspiring musician who listened to the MC5 seemed to have started a band. And the you have that trickle down all the way through to today. You know, they are still, they're still cited, they're still revered as one of those great touchstones and signposts, and rightfully so.
As a person who does a deep dive into music on a literal hourly basis like you do, does it warm your heart that they're going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after all these years, and that they're maybe kind of being appreciated for what they really were?
You know, there's a duality of feeling there. You know, I'm a voting member, I'm a professional voting member of the Rock Hall, and certainly have been pumping their drum and kicking out their jams for a long time, you know, amidst the various voting bodies. I'm happy it happened. I'm sorry it didn't happen sooner when it should have happened. And what I really hope is this is a wake-up call to the entities, the committees within the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that let's get these deserving people in when they're still alive to recognize it. I mean, it's somewhat tragic that not one of them is going to be at this ceremony on October 19th. Their families will be, and that's great. And, you know, they'll represent in the MC5 parlance, they'll testify in all the right ways. But for God's sake, for as many times as they were on the ballot, why weren't they in before this? So I'll be cheering with everybody else. I'll be down there. I'll be cheering with everybody else. But I'll still have a chip on my shoulder that it didn't happen sooner.
Your answer to that question screams for another question, which is, who else is out there in a similar situation that deserves to be recognized by the Hall of Fame?
So it's funny, at least twice a year I write this story, you know, and you know, you do it once when the nominees are announced, and then you wind up doing it once somewhere around the ceremony. And the last one I wrote had like 60 odd people. So you'll forgive me if I don't list them all, but the one to me that is screaming out, and this is the homer in me, but Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a band that had enormous commercial impact and that kind of impact of influence, like we just described about the MC5 and the Stooges. They made other people want to be in a band. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here we have several of them still alive. And another one that would be criminal if it waited until none of them were around before they got in. So there are a lot of drums being thumped within the Hall of Fame mechanism for Mitch Ryder, you know, the Wheels in particular.
This book is more of a compilation of stories and characters and everything else than anything else. As a writer, what's your favorite story in the story?
It, you know, it's funny because I've heard almost all the stories over the years from people, and I will give a shout out to, you know, Brad, who's my good friend, and you know, also to Jan and Ben Edmonds, who I knew well and is of blessed memory, doing such a fine job in finishing these books. Brad told you all about it and what they had to do to finish it. You know, the ones that stand out is Chicago, the Democratic National Convention, because it's almost a comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys showing up and expecting the rest of the world to show up and didn't. And here they were stuck and all hell breaks loose. You know, it wasn't a comedy at the time, but, you know, it's such an interesting story. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's nice to read about the commune and, like, you know, life, mm-hmm. life of the MC5 together. And then to hear some of the early stories of these guys when they were just kids, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, Wayne and Fred were learning to play guitars, and mm-hmm. the kinship that developed there and the family feeling. So I know I haven't told you a favorite, but I'll go with Chicago. It's kind of an obvious and pedestrian choice, but it's still a great story.
Well, that's okay. We forgive you for that one. How would you grade the book?
The book, I don't know. It's an A-level book. It's if somebody were to tell me what's the book to read about the MC5, it would be this book. If somebody were to ask me what's the book or books to read about the Detroit music scene, this would be one of the ones I'd hand them.
Fantastic.
And I'm emailing an invoice to Brad as I'm saying all this.
I don't blame you. What about comparative bands now? Is there a comparative band or bands to the MC5?
Strictly to the MC5. Not really, because we're in a music world where it's harder to have the impact that the MC5 did. You know, I mean, the world-changing impact. It was funny, as you know, when Maneskin came out. From Italy, and they came around. I went to see them, and I was like, yeah, okay, they get the spirit. There's a lot of bands that, you know, even Soul Asylum running around now, you know, is a band that clearly they listened to the MC5, they drew inspiration from it. Anything Todd Morello touches or is part of it is part of it. But, you know, these are definitely acolytes, and the MC5 is the original, and you can't replace that kind of impact.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Gary, we really appreciate you taking the time to be on with us. We're looking forward to this event in Lincoln Park, and plus the book rollout downtown. This should be a pretty cool October to have these guys back in somewhat of the limelight, and certainly Rock and Roll Hall of Fame entry does not come along every day of the week, that's for sure.
I hope everybody's getting their Disney Plus, at least trial subscription, lined up so they can watch it as it happens. And, you know, hopefully when we're down in Cleveland, we'll hear the thunder that's coming from up here in the Detroit area.
Well, fantastic. Our next session segment in this will be with our local people who are putting this together, Stephanie Day, Tom Carnes, Jeff Day, and that'll be coming up next in just after this little blip. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the final segment of our look into the life and times of the MC5, who are going to be celebrated in Lincoln Park in October. Our guests in this segment are Stephanie Davis, Community Events Coordinator. She's on the left in Lincoln Park. Tom Carnes in the middle, former mayor and the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce. And Jeff Day, director of the Lincoln Park Historical Museum. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. We have been talking for probably a good 40 minutes to people about, to experts in the music industry, about the MC5. Who came up with the idea of for this October the 12th tribute in Lincoln Park, and how did it develop? Jeff, you want to take that? You want to start?
Well, we actually started working with the Parks and Rec Department several months ago. It was Becky Tyner. Mm-hmm. Becky reached out to us through a phone call about doing something for the band going into the Hall of Fame. You know, they were from Lincoln Park. What are we going to do? So there, the families had talked a little bit. This was just getting started. Talked about a dedication of trees in the park near the band shell. Mm-hmm. So that's how this all began. Was just a tree dedication. So we started talking to Parks and Rec, and we got a date set together that was going to work for the families. That was number one. And that's how October 12th came into being. And then we talked about the tree and the location of the tree. It went from five trees to one tree because there wasn't room to put five trees in Memorial Park near the bandshell. So there is one tree. It will be dedicated on the 12th with a plaque on a big boulder so nobody can steal it.
I wouldn't be sure.
Yeah, well, we're hoping. So that's how it all began. We were going to do this tree dedication, and it grew out of that into something a lot bigger. We brought in some additional helpers to produce the event, essentially. Mm-hmm. So we were able to line up some bands to perform mm-hmm. on the day. We have a disc jockey. We have the families, as I mentioned, that will be participating. Mm-hmm. We have local officials. The current mayor, mm-hmm. Mike Higgins, will be participating, as well as other county and state officials.
Stephanie, what are we going to see from the entertainment angle?
Well, Jeff booked the entertainment. He has the American Muse, which is an MC5 tribute band.
Okay.
It'll be first time I'll be hearing of them, but I'm excited to hear what. Who else do you have for
Sugar Tradition? Sugar Tradition is mm-hmm. an up and coming. Mm-hmm. Band influenced by, among many others, but certainly the MC5. They have more of a psychedelic rock and roll mm-hmm. background. They've been together since about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Some of their albums are available digitally, I know, on their website. So if you look up Sugar Tradition, you'll see where they are. They perform mostly in the Detroit area, although they have toured. And they have one vinyl product out called More Sugar that came out last year.
Okay, alrighty. Tom, how much did you know about the MC5 before we got into this
celebration? Not a great deal. Mm-hmm. Even though I grew up in Lincoln Park, and mm-hmm. so it had to have been in that same era, but mm-hmm. didn't have a whole lot. When they did the 50th anniversary mm-hmm. a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to meet Dennis Thompson. I learned a little bit more about them. We had it at the museum that time.
Okay.
And I started listening a little bit to their music, which was a little not my taste during when I was growing up. But Their song is an anthem to that that period, really. Mm-hmm. Everybody identifies with Kick Out the Jams.
Yeah, and that is without a doubt. You know, you look at a band like that, and you know, could they be what they turned out to be without the era? Okay, you know, you wonder.
I think about them going to the same school that I went to, Lincoln Park mm-hmm. High. So four of them attended there, two of them graduated. I think one was the class clown. I don't know which. Yeah.
Rob Tyner was
the lead singer who was Becky's husband.
In that era, you also had groups that would play out of the garages. Mm-hmm. No announcement, whatever they were playing. Mm-hmm. So when I'm 10 or 12, I'm just wondering if they had done that at any time. And I'm curious about where they used to hang out when they were in Lincoln Park. You know, what, you know, either drive-ins were big at that particular time and then cruising around. Mm-hmm. Just curious, and you know, how they were as kids, I guess.
Well, something tells me you're going to learn a lot of background when you spend your time on October the 12th, mm-hmm. okay, going through all this with so many of their relatives. Now, you touched on some of the people who are going to be there. Who else is going to represent them? Because, you know, just to remind people, all of these band members have passed.
Right. Yeah. So the fellow who's working as the MC for the event is Tino Gross.
Okay.
I think you may know Tino by name. He's a local rock guy from that generation, essentially. Mm-hmm. Good friends with Wayne Kramer. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's going to be serving as the MC. Mm-hmm. And then we have a disc jockey called Soul Deep, who is from Riverview, downriver guy, Mike Dutkovich. And we have, who else is participating? We have some speakers like Peter Werby, M.L. Liebler, the families, as I mentioned, and there may be some surprises that we don't yet know about.
Stephanie. Ticket prices on this one or not? I know you
this
usually...
This is a free event. Free event to the
totally
public.
Totally free event.
Yep, free event to the public.
Okay, and you're going to have food trucks there and...
We're going to have food trucks. There are going to be some MC5 specific vendors.
Okay.
People to buy stuff. There will be, I know, a poster signing. Like, people could buy posters. Okay. The MC5. I think it'll be really fun. People are really excited. Mm-hmm. People know the band shell for the MC5, mm-hmm. and also with Linkin Park coming up about our centennial, this feels like a really good introduction into celebrating 100 years.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
The department's really excited.
And there'll be book signing as well, correct?
Yes, the book that's coming out that you've talked
about.
With
Brad Tolinsky.
So that'll be available to purchase and have signed by the co-authors for that.
Oh, well, fantastic. How big a crowd are we looking at, do you think?
Well, for our Thursday concerts, we get around 500 to 600 people, but this is a very special event. I think we're going to also get that same type of crowd of people, probably 500 plus.
Plus.
Yeah,
500. Yeah. Through all of this, how many times did the MC5 ever really perform in Lincoln Park at the band shell? Did it perform there a lot?
That was in their early years. They performed there when they were just getting started. So you're going back to the mid-60s.
Right.
Yeah, when they were like just out of high school.
Because I know we start this entire episode with a portion of their concert, Tartar Field, where they're playing their anthem, so to speak, and things like that. Was anybody here, and I know Stephanie, you certainly wouldn't, anybody here actually see them perform?
I did not.
No, I didn't either.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. You got somebody.
So we have one person in the whole room who has seen
them. There you go.
Any other special tributes? You've talked about the tree. Mm-hmm. We've talked about some other things. Is Lincoln Park doing anything else with this band and or their relatives?
Yeah. So the city itself will be recognizing the band by making a presentation to the families of that. Mm-hmm. And then also the state of Michigan will be sending a recognition declaration about the MC5 going into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So we have those events that are part of the whole presentation.
In when you look back at this, it's almost a shame that all of these gentlemen have passed before they're able to be honored. And I know you're piggybacking, you're honoring off of what's going on in Cleveland with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. It's almost a shame that at least one of those guys couldn't be around to see that.
Yes, it is.
Well, we had, when it was their 50th anniversary,
right. Mm-hmm.
We did at that time a pretty good job of honoring him, Dennis Thompson,
right.
And the family members.
And the families were
that
there,
were
too,
there.
At
so
that time.
We gave a little bit at that particular time, not the way things are going now with a full-fledged, not attack, but it just...
Well, it almost seems like the MC5 is the most famous band around that a lot of people now never heard of. I mean, on the music side, great influence behind the scenes. On the public side, it's like, you know...
It depends on the group you're talking to. Mm-hmm. That might be the case in the Downriver area, maybe more so than Detroit, because they were much more involved in the music scene in the city. Mm-hmm. They performed at the Grandy. They were the house band at the Grandy Ballroom. Mm-hmm. So people from that generation, a lot of younger folks, don't necessarily know, unless they're really heavily into rock music. And if they are, then they probably will know.
It's the American dream. That's what you're talking about. Four high school friends getting together, goofing around, playing guitar a little bit in the backyards, in the basement, and then hooking up with another guy, and then all of a sudden they're on the national stage, and now they're going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So,
exactly.
How many kids started out in high school thinking about that? We're in little bands and things.
Mm-hmm. Have any of you got a draft of Tolinsky's book?
No, I haven't.
That's kind of interesting because the stories are so diverse because they're all different, basically different stories from different people, a lot of different angles, new, old, it is a fascinating story. There's no doubt about that. We missing anything? Any suggestions for the public headed into this?
I did want to mention one other thing. And in addition to the band members all being gone, we lost John Sinclair this year. And John was their manager, as you know, for the years that they were together. And so he was, quite a cultural figure of his own. And so I did want to mention that John was part of that whole scene.
Exactly. Well, hey, I wish you guys all the luck in the world on October the 12th. It'll be around. It's going to come up real quick on us, but it sounds like you're more than prepared. Any special parking issues or anything like that?
We're hoping.
We'll have people on site to direct the parking. There is a lot of park area, not parking specifically, but we're going to be parking people in the park around from there. They'll be directing to that. There'll be no charge for parking. There's no charge for the event. This is just a nice tribute by the city of Lincoln Park to the MC5 in celebration of their being inducted to the Rock Hall of Fame. Nobody's making a profit from this. We're just having a celebration for them.
Sounds like fun. Yeah. Stephanie, once you get past the MC5 and their celebration here, anything else going in Lincoln Park that you want to let viewers know about after that, or is this pretty much the end of the season?
For events for Parks Recreation, so the weekend after the MC5 induction, we're having our Nightmare on 4th Street Halloween event, which is we have a trunk or treat and we have games outside. We officially have the largest trunk or treat in Downriver. We had around 500 kids last year come through to trunk or treat, and just a really fun event. And then after that, Fantasyland starts setting up right after. And that opens on November 30th, Fantasyland.
Yeah. All right.
And it's, 50 years?
Yep, 50 years.
50 years?
60, I'm sorry.
Sorry, 60.
60 years. 60 years.
Time flies. Yeah. And that's always been an extremely well-attended, well-appreciated event, there's no doubt.
I should add one other little thing, if I could.
Go.
We're trying to locate people who saw the band perform at the band shell back in the 60s. So far, I haven't been able to locate or talk to anybody who was there. And it's not that long ago, really. It's like 60 years. If there's anybody out there that can contact us who was there, we'd love to have them come and talk and maybe share that memory. That would be great.
What would be the best way to contact you?
They can contact us at the museum phone number.
Okay.
Can I give you that?
Yeah, sure.
313-365 15, no, that's my number. No, call my number. I don't care. 734-365-1534.
All right. Fantastic. They can call me. Tom, you look
some
like
photo, no, some photos would be, if they have it.
Oh, yeah.
A little Instamatic or whatever they had at the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, old Polaroids.
Yes. There
you go. Without a doubt. Well, hey, thanks for sitting in on this segment. I know you guys brought it together real well. Good luck to what you're having on October the 12th. Stephanie Davis, Tom Carnes, Jeff Day, all out of Lincoln Park. And we'll be back with our final portion of this episode of Destination Downriver after this. There may never be another rock band quite like the MC5. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show, Brad Talinsky, Gary Graff, Stephanie Davis, Tom Carnes, and Jeff Day. Remember that Lincoln Park's celebration of the MC5 will begin at 3 p.m. October 12th at the Lincoln Park Band Shell. The following week, the band will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. The Hall of Fame induction will be streamed live by Disney Plus with a special airing on ABC TV at a later date. It'll also be available on Hulu. For Samantha Rickard and Joe Camilleri working the controls behind the scenes, I'm Carl Zimak. We'll see you next on another episode of Destination Downriver.
Thank you again to our sponsors, Martinson Family of Funeral Homes and Allegra Marketing, with a special thanks to our production partners here at the new Taylor Media Center. Thanks for listening and watching. Please visit our website, destinationdownriver.com, or our Facebook page, and be sure to join us for next month's podcast.